Philip, how are you, my friend?
I'm good. What do you think of that that new Wu-Tang? I don't know if that's a remix of an old song or a new track I sent you.
It is a new track from a whole new album, and I was listening to it in the gym the other day, unbeknownst to all of the other young bros there, listening to their modern music. And I have to say, while I was listening to it, I thought, nothing is different. They sound exactly the same as they did in the 90s, except that there's some references to like how to raise your family and be a good person, which is not something you would have heard in the 90s.
I thought the production was pretty good. And the lineup of vocalists, I think, was a little different because like half of them have died, right?
Right. Yeah. They also had Sean Price on that album, who passed away 2 years ago, who's a great rapper. But yeah, I know it's interesting. They're just bringing out whatever tape they have left. And they did a great job because it all sounds like it belongs together.
Nice.
What'd you think?
I just heard the one song. I actually need to now go and dig back into the album, but I've played it like 20 times already. It's fun. I don't know. It just has that feeling I liked about Wu-Tang.
Well, it's got that classic kind of boom bap rhythm and, you know, the great samples, and it really stays true to the original sound, I would say.
What did RZA stop doing production with them, or is he not? Because I don't think he was credited with the production, or I don't know. Maybe I missed that, but.
Well, I think the big difference is they have money now, so they can pay people. They can like buy beats from people.
Got it.
Yeah, he still does some production, but definitely not all of it. I think he's more into these movie soundtracks and you know, kind of a more, I don't want to say more musical, but more like a classic instrumentation. Like he did the Django soundtrack, which was good.
Did you see that movie he was in with the Shogun Assassin, I think was the movie.
I did not see that one. It got really awful reviews.
Oh, listen.
Am I wrong?
I thought it was great.
Really?
No, not Shogun Assassin. Dear folks at home, I promise we will get into this. I'll look it up. I'll get back to you. It was pretty good. I just cannot think of...
Ghost Dog Killer, the man with the iron fists. No,
Ghost Dog, the Way of the Samurai. That's the one with Forest Whitaker.
Oh yeah, I saw that. That's really old. From 2000.
Mm-hmm. I did the soundtrack for that.
Philip, I was barely alive then.
You were just an embryo at that point, right?
I've seen that one. You know, I'm not a big fan of the RZA as a rapper. I'm more of a fan of RZA as the guy who brought this alternative, fresh take on hip hop. But he's not the greatest musician ever to live, I would say.
Yep.
It's a little blasphemous for me to say that, but I'll stand by it.
That's all right. It's a good movie soundtrack, too.
Well, so Philip, today we are talking about something that really matters to the last two episodes, which was all about connecting with influencers and how to help influencers build content, deliver great value to their audiences while they help you spread your big ideas. So the question, of course, is, well, how do I get a big idea? What the hell does that look like? And, you know, a lot of people have what we would term to be generic or maybe even uninteresting ideas that could potentially be a big idea. So I think we need to talk about that. But first,
I agree. Let me interrupt you.
Please.
You know, I realized this some years ago, and it was the most perhaps the most depressing realization that I've had in quite a while. A few years ago, I was doing this service called My Content Sherpa, and I was creating content marketing for dev shops on a subscription basis. And this is where I first really ran headfirst into this problem. And it looked kind of like this. It was like, great, yes, I will happily take your money to create content for you. Let's start talking about content that's going to be worth people's attention, that's going to, you know, earn attention from your prospects. And what I would find is that people who were running successful businesses, you know, in the world of custom software development, but this really applies to lots, I mean, really the whole world of professional services. There's tons of people who run successful businesses, you know, doing accounting work or law, you know, attorney work or, you know, you just name it. And they do so without having what we're talking about, which is a big idea of some kind. And lacking that does not mean your business is going to fail, but it makes it real hard to produce interesting, sort of, you know, compelling, dynamic content of any kind. And usually, you know, as we've been talking about, that's the asset that you're bringing to the table when you try to connect with an influencer. And if you don't have that big idea, then you're like, am I going to produce another how-to guide on what, copywriting, or, you know, another how-to save money on your taxes guide, or, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that's where a lot of people get stuck. And you just said something that stuck out to me, which is, you know, if you don't have this big idea, how do you produce great content? And maybe we'll have to come back to why producing great content is so important to your business in the long run, right?
Let me give away the punchline. It's a lot harder to produce that content if you don't have what we're about to talk about, which is maybe we're kind of overselling it by calling it a big idea. But for sure, if you don't have something that looks like what we're going to talk about, it's so much harder to produce content that's not generic, that's not just interchangeable or identical with anybody else's content who's got similar experience.
Yeah. So while we're on that, I think what I mean when I say big idea is something that's memorable, and there's many different reasons why an idea might be memorable, but something that's memorable and can be associated directly to you. That's what I mean when I say, you know, you should be looking for a big idea in your business. Is that about what you think too?
Yeah. One of the ways I'll express it when I'm working with people in various capacity is all, I mean, I don't try to make them feel bad or challenge them too much, but I say, we've got to have something, or let me back up. I'll say, we're trying to reach people here. And they're busy, they're overwhelmed. And I want you to imagine they're sitting at their desk. They've got a, you know, stack of papers that's like 3 feet high on their desk that they've got to get through. And, you know, what is going to cause them to look up from that stack of papers and give you 30 seconds even of their time and attention? You know, if you're lucky, you'll get that. And then if, you know, if there's resonance, then you'll get more than that. But that's how I like people to imagine the world of, I mean, online marketing, but even beyond that, just the world of marketing, where you've got to earn people's attention. What are you going to do that's worth that time for someone who's busy and overwhelmed and has a million things going on? So that's also what I think of when I think of what we're talking about here, which we'll just label, you know, your big idea, is what have you got that's worth somebody's time and attention?
So of course I think about Seth Godin's Purple Cow, because it's just such a brilliant, like, you know, head slapping idea, like so simple, right? If there's a purple cow in the field, what are you going to look at? Obviously the purple one. And so, you know, and just to illustrate this, I had a client who I won't name, but they did great, fantastic development work, business intelligence kind of work, data analytics kind of stuff. And they kept asking me, my role was to help them sharpen their marketing message and improve their copy. And, you know, it was one of these situations where they're just kind of like, can you sex it up a little bit? And I'm like, you know, there isn't a big idea here. There isn't some sort of, unique worldview or something both memorable and that people can associate back to you, you're basically doing and saying the same things as everyone else. And therefore, we shouldn't undertake any serious content or marketing efforts until there's something that's more likely to stick, right? Mm-hmm. And that's exactly the problem where I think a lot of people just stall out in their marketing is right at that stage.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's sort of like, okay, we can build a house, but if there's no blueprint, it might come out a little funky. It's almost worse than that. It's like it might fall down or it may not meet the goals of providing shelter. It's kind of a dumb example, but it really is one of these foundational things. So it is important.
So in a second here, we're going to go over what are some of the types of ideas that you might look at that you can adopt and really start to take a generic or maybe slightly uninteresting idea and make it interesting or big. But there are a couple points we want to make first. Now, the first one is people will often combine different categories. So it's not as if you should be listening to this and think, okay, I need to pick one category and then move forward. And in fact, if you're able to combine a few of the categories, which we'll cover in a second, don't worry, we'll get there. If you can combine those, I think it really improves the power and the stickiness of your idea to begin with. Mm-hmm. Now, the second thing, Philip, tell me why I should not want Oprah status and what that means.
It sounds like a giant pain in the ass to me, but
indeed. Plus you have to like give away cars and all kinds of stuff that you don't want to give away.
Yeah, seriously. You know, we keep using this label, a big idea, but I think that could easily give the wrong impression. So when you and I were chatting about this previously, I brought up that I would hate for people to think that big idea means that your idea or your content or your way of expressing what you do or how you do it, don't get the impression that that has to be worthy of being on the Oprah show. And I don't actually mean Oprah specifically. I just mean that level of scale, of exposure, of audience size. So we could just as easily say, your big idea doesn't need to earn you an interview on NPR. It doesn't need to be a book that's on the New York Times bestseller list. It does not need to be, what are some other examples of like massive scale?
Oh, I mean, the Billboard charts, right? If you're a musician, do you have to have a number one hit to make a good living? No, definitely not.
Right. Yeah. So, we could give other specific examples, but I think that captures it pretty well. A big idea does not come hand in hand with, it's not defined by the scale necessarily. I think it's defined by the impact at the scale you want to be at. And you can make a wonderful living from seemingly microscopic audiences or, markets where there's just 1,000 or 2,000 potential clients. If you think about it, the Fortune 500 is a small market in terms of number of companies because there's only 500 of them.
Right.
I mean, they marshal a tremendous amount of financial resources, of course, which makes them not a small market. But my point is, from the scale perspective, it's not about big necessarily. The idea needs to be impactful and powerful. And that's what we mean, I think, when we say big, but the scale doesn't have to be big in terms of a numeric scale or the reach of a, national television audience, blah, blah, blah.
Well, and I think, something that might be useful is, I think about these business classics like How to Win Friends and Influence People or something like Michael Gerber's E-Myth. And, my guess is Michael Gerber probably didn't set out to write, a top 10 business book when he wrote that book. The key thing here is to figure out, how can I get an idea that will stick with anybody? And then start to, you know, you don't really need to think about the scale. The first question is, can I find an idea that is sticky and feels a little bit bigger and resonant? And then the scale will take care of itself, maybe, because there's some luck in that. But really, is this something that may catch in the market that I'm targeting? That's kind of the key idea. So we're not looking to be big in the sense of global or top 10 or top 100 even, because you can build a great business with much less than that.
Yeah. And I have this theory that if your goal is, like, if you're just a nobody, and I don't mean that like in a moral sense, just like if you have no audience, no recognition, nobody really knows who you are, and your goal is like global or national recognition in a mass scale, I think you're it's almost impossible to succeed, because I think that goal is too ambitious. It puts the wrong kind of pressure on you, and I think it undermines you at every step. Whereas I think a more incremental approach of, well, can I get one person to pay attention? Oh, okay, great. Can I get 50 to pay attention? Now, can I get 100 to pay attention? I guess I think about this sort of in those numbers, because that's really how it goes when you're building an email list. No one's born with a big email list. So that's a kind of example of building an audience all by yourself on the strength, hopefully, of your big ideas. Anyway, I just wanted to say, I think the idea that you would start with this goal of being like the next Tony Robbins is a little ridiculous. That might be a sort of aspiration or a vision you have, but that doesn't actually seem to me like an actionable goal.
Probably not. And even Tony Robbins had no example or reason to believe that he would be as large as he is now. So I think you try to do something great and memorable, and then you figure out how to do a little bit more of it or something better. So the first big kind of idea that you can look at is a controversial one. So we talked a little bit about this last time, and one person that you mentioned, Philip, that looks for ways to be different through controversy is Alan Weiss, who wrote Million Dollar Consulting, and he has what's called the Million Dollar Franchise because he has, I don't know, a dozen or so books that start with Million Dollar blank, coaching, consultant, speaker, on and on and on. Can you think of a way that he's been controversial in those books?
Well, I can think of one specific example at least. What he would do is, honestly, I think you can boil this into a simple one or two step recipe. One is, let's say every year you see what's a business book that's been on the New York Times bestseller list that advocates some kind of big idea. For a while, there was this book called Good to Great. I've not read the book. I actually don't know what it is, but
Jim Collins, you should read it, yeah. By the way.
Okay. Well, I think what Alan did is he said, okay, that book seems to be getting a lot of attention, a lot of mind share. I'm going to say that it's wrong, and I'm going to back it up with some, reasonable, credible arguments, which you can do for almost any of these big ideas, by the way. Big doesn't mean they're right, doesn't mean they're waterproof, doesn't mean they're, incontrovertible. They're just popular, really, at the scale of like a New York Times bestseller book. So that was step one, find a sort of soft target. And step two is construct a thoughtful, not a cheap shot argument, but a thoughtful argument against it, and start giving talks or writing, stuff on your website that says why that's wrong. And that's really his process. So I forget exactly what he, came up with that was like, no, this good to get great ideas, that's the wrong idea. Really, you need to be doing this. And you could call that picking a fight, I guess. But it's also just saying, you know, gentlemen can disagree about these things, and I disagree, and here's where I'm coming from. And it just makes it easier for people to pay attention, because when you're saying, no, that's wrong, here's what I think is a better way or a more effective way to look at that same thing, you're riding on the coattails of the person who's popularized that idea. And so you have a starting point that people can relate to.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is in that case, Alan really piggybacked on a more popular author's book by saying it was wrong. That's one thing. The other thing is, I notice in markets where there's very little new information coming out, controversy or maybe areas where the literature is very well established, controversy seems to be a more common tack that people take. So one of those areas is health and wellness. So you see this obviously in weight loss all the time. So my favorite one is there was a product called 7-Minute Abs, which, you know, of course, controversial in that you don't have to spend 2 hours a day in the gym and eating healthy and watching everything that you eat and living a life of misery in order to look good. You can have perfect abs in just 7 minutes a day. And then shortly after that, what's better than 7-minute abs, of course, 6-minute abs. I'm going to come eat your lunch in one less minute. So, you know, to me, that's a very strong controversial idea. And there's lots and lots of other ways to go about this. But basically, the whole idea behind controversy is you're saying someone specifically is wrong, or something that's taken for granted or feels like the status quo is wrong.
Yep. Yep. And it's, you know, it could be lots of things. You know, in software development, where most of my clients are, there's opportunities to do this with stuff like the process by which software is developed. For a long time, it was, you know, a lot of upfront planning and then just an execution phase where the plan doesn't change. That's called waterfall development. And, you know, people are still writing articles for or against that idea, even though it's, you know, for 10 or 20 years now, there's been an alternate model called Agile that's very popular. And I think if someone sincerely believes that Agile is a bad idea, that's a great opportunity for them to develop, you know, what we're calling a big idea, which, I don't know, I guess we've not said this, it doesn't have to be unique to them. Like, you don't have to have exclusive sole, you know, quote unquote ownership of your big idea,
right?
For it to be effective, you know, for the marketing purposes we're talking about here. I am not the only person who says you should specialize, but, you know, that's one of the big ideas that I really get behind. And I also don't say everybody should specialize. Anyway, there's lots of opportunities. It's sort of, you know, are you going against conventional wisdom is maybe one way to look at it.
Yeah, and I think you said something important, and this applies to controversy or any of the other kinds of ideas that we're going to talk about, is it works best when you sincerely believe what you're saying, when you're passionate, when there's an energy around the idea that you're promoting. That's when it's really going to click for people, and it's really going to cause them to not only listen to you, but probably buy in, right? We're very attracted and persuaded when other people truly believe what they're saying. So I think that's definitely something you should keep in mind.
I'm not sure it's even optional. I'm not sure you could ever fake it. You know what I mean? The believing and buying into the idea. Like, if you don't believe it and buy into it, I think it will come across as a prop, not really as a part of you.
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually think of two other businesses in this next category, which I call the sea change. And what I mean by that is, you'll hear this a lot, and Philip, you pointed out that this is half of all business books ever written, but
probably
right. But basically, you're going to make the case that there are currents out there in the world, whether it's the economy, the market, the culture, politics, whatever it is, that are changing the way the world exists today. And because of that, there's going to be a ripple effect that will change the way people do things. And so, you know, I can think of one huge example, which is Salesforce, and they said, no software, right? Uh-huh. It said, you know, big bold letters, no software, with a red circle around it and a line through the no software. And the point that they were making essentially is there's this thing called the cloud, and you're no longer going to have on-premise software, perpetual licenses. You're going to buy software as a service. And they weren't the first person to sell software as a service, but they were the first ones to really market it as a marketing asset that I can think of. And so they did a really good job of telling this sea change story in a time when people weren't used to paying a monthly fee, especially for, you know, 100 or 1,000 salespeople. That was probably crazy at the time.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a great example. I think some of the kind of, first of all, in the world of software, like that's so huge, that idea that this trend is going to come through, it's going to sweep through. And if you're not ready, you know, you're fucked. the crude way to put that. And, you see that in business books as well. But just because technology is so fast changing, I guess is my point. You see it even more in this sort of specific subsegment of business technology stuff. It's just, you know, it seems like every month there's some new thing that is touted as something that's going to upend everything and change everything, and you better be ready, you better watch out, kind of a thing. So not all of that. A lot of that stuff is kind of flavor of the moment. It comes and goes. And it's not very durable. And that's not in quite the kind of big idea I would want to invest a lot of time and energy in promoting, because it's not evergreen.
And yes.
That, you know, as we're talking about these, I think that's a quality we might point out, is that I feel like the sea change category of big ideas are different variations of short-lived. Short-lived might be, a year or 5 years or 10 years, but over the scale of a human life, that's still, you know, just a smaller part of, you know, the 60 or 80 or 100 years you might live. So I'm not so hot on the sea change ideas for that reason.
So you stole my thunder on that one, because that's the exact point.
Sorry, man.
No, it's fine. That was the exact point I was going to make, and I was going to give a really concrete example about that, because by the very nature of the sea change argument, or the idea itself, is that the world is changing and you need to get with the times. So by that very argument, it's saying it's going to continue to change, right? And the times are going to change, because that's what you're telling me now. So I think of the example of HubSpot, and their whole marketing position initially was, business has changed. People now, especially if you're a small business, because they targeted the SMB market, people now will go on and do, what's the statistic? 57% of the buying cycle online before they even engage with sales. You need content, and you need ways for people to find you and engage with your brand before they're ready to buy. And if you don't, they're going to buy from someone else because they have it. Now, the reason HubSpot can no longer use this argument is because associated with this was this idea that if you build it, they will come. Go and publish blog content, people will show up to your website. And with the amount of blog content being published now, we know for sure that is absolutely not going to happen for, say, 98% of anybody who hits publish. Most people aren't going to go there. You need a way to promote the content as well. So that's a perfect example of a company that used the sea change idea. The whole environment and atmosphere changed, partially due to their success, but partially due to the bigger factors at work. And now they have to find a new way to position and market themselves. So I agree. This one's short-lived. It's a good story, but it has an expiration date.
You know, I was going to say that it's overstating it to say it this way, that HubSpot was a victim of their own success because they're promoting this idea that this is a good thing, but the you know, the sort of culmination of that idea is a very noisy internet where there's a lot of interchangeable content, right, and that weakens the appeal of of their product. So it's kind of a funny thing where they kind of contributed to, they sort of undermined themselves in the long run. And I'm not sure anybody could have foreseen, well, I don't know. I'm actually not sure anybody could have really foreseen where the internet has gone.
Well, in the case of HubSpot though, they may have, if you ask them, hey, if this campaign was so successful that you would have to come up with a new way to sell yourselves, would you be open to that? They'd probably say, yeah, okay, we'll figure it out. I mean,
sure.
I guess at some point you may want to roll the dice on it. I prefer something that's evergreen. It sounds like you do too. So I think in terms of what I would recommend, I wouldn't recommend SeaChange, but I do think that there is a place for it.
And, you know, there's an interesting sort of micro tangent from that, which is this idea that, okay, let's say you do have a big idea and you're excited because this gives you leverage or an asset that you can use to build an audience.
Right.
And that feels like, if you've never had that before, it feels amazing. You're like, oh my gosh, wow. My business is not just me and my personality. It has this strength because it's associated with this big idea. And then you realize, I'm not sure it happens this way for everybody, but at some point you realize, oh, not everybody, people are going to come in and out of my audience. They're going to be attracted to this idea. They're going to try it out maybe, or they're going to, you know, give it some time and attention. And then some people will say, no, thanks, that's not for me. Some people will incorporate this idea into their business, their life, and fail or succeed and move on. So we were talking about the temporary nature of this category of big ideas that we're calling the sea change, but people will also come and go from your audience, no matter how awesome your big idea is. Like, you're going to see, you know, turnover or churn in your audience. And that is totally normal. There's no idea that's so compelling and so, you know, magical that it creates people who are in your audience for life, I don't think.
I agree with you. You know, I was going to say, let's say the idea has such draw that someone comes in and they're a really loyal fan of Philip Morgan or whomever, you know, there's going to come a time when they're ready for the next thing. They've exhausted it. They've been exposed to the idea. They understand everything that you have to say about it. They're going to need something new and fresh. And so in a way, every idea has an expiration date, but some you will not be able to use with anybody. And that, I think the sea change category fits into that, where, you know, there's going to come a time, say 5 or 10 years from now, like you said, it's no longer going to be applicable. You can't convincingly use it anymore. So there's a lot to this. So the next one, Philip, is what I like to call the fresh perspective. And what that really means, I think, is having a unique take or a new take on an existing single idea. Or you can also marry two ideas that haven't been combined to tell a story in a new way. So I would put one of the things that I've been talking about, which is the opening act strategy. So using other people's platform in order to build your audience. And I'm telling that story through music, right? You know, there's a headliner and there's an opening act. And if you're the opening act, you get to play for the headliner's audience. And that, it's not a brand new idea, but it helps people really understand and latch on to it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So fresh perspective, like, I mean, the world of music is like full of that, right? I'm not sure that that's the best source of examples here, but like right now there's so much indie music that, that is just, drawing on like what the 80s music sounds like, sounded like, and they're, you know, sort of twisting, giving it a twist or a modernization or what have you. So, you see that happen all the time in music.
Well, so on the music note, there's, no pun intended, the music note, there's a whole, new type of sort of music cottage industry popping up in which they try to predict hits through algorithms and, you know, analyzing all the past hits. And one interesting thing that's coming out of that is they're finding that a new song can't be so different than all of its predecessors. Otherwise, no one's going to like it. So in the book, The Power of Habit, Charles Duhigg talks about the song Hey Ya, the Outkast song. And at first, it was a total flop. And what they did is they kind of looked around and they figured out which songs it was most like. And so they asked the radio to play it in the context of the other songs that it was more like. And that's when it absolutely took off. So that's kind of an interesting angle on the fresh perspective, is it really piggybacks on this idea that people want new, but they also want familiar at the same time. And that's what this category really allows you to do. So,
oh, interesting.
In terms of consulting, one person that we both know and I think of, well, is besides you, but I don't want to put you on the spot. I also think of Jonathan Stark talking about pricing. So his website is expensiveproblem.com. And you may argue that he also fits into personality, which I would argue any one person business does. Personality is an inseparable part of the business. But I think he also brings a fresh perspective in that he's delivering information about pricing your services and writing better proposals in the context of being a software developer.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of other examples of having a new take on a single idea. Not really coming up with anything right now, but
Why don't we come back to that a little bit? Because I think this is a good segue to localizing. Because I think the example that I just gave with Jonathan Stark is not only an example of a fresh perspective, but an example of localizing. So I know this is a term you use, Philip. Why don't you talk about what it means to localize?
It's a sort of book/software term, where you take something like a book or a piece of software and make it, change it so that it works for a different locale. I mean, that's literally what it means. And it can be as simple as translating the language of the interface and the help documentation of the software.
Right.
I guess also the marketing for that software. But it can also be other things like, there's like cultural implications of certain ways that software is designed, and that's all part of localizing. And localizing is really just taking something that's generic and making it specific to an audience in the context that I'm using it here. So I think of this guy, Anthony Balduzzi, who has this website called the Fit Father Project. And he's taking, research about health and diet and fitness. And what you could probably argue are well-established ideas, and he's sort of curating them or localizing them, as we're saying here, for a specific audience, which is men who are entrepreneurs and fathers. And those are people who, almost by definition are extremely busy. They have a lot of constraints on their time. So they can't do a lot of the stuff that they would normally be advised to do by someone who's trying to help them improve their fitness and their diet. You know, they'd be on all kinds of restrictive meal plans, really specific things about eating time and so forth. And that just doesn't work. So localizing is really like adapting something so it's a better fit for an audience. So when you look at this guy, Anthony Balduzzi, that's what he's doing. And I don't mean that in a dismissive way whatsoever. It's it adds a ton of value when you do that. But the idea is not like some unique original idea that he's promoting. He's just saying, okay, let's take all this information that's out there about, you know, health and wellness, and let's make it work for you, you know, busy, overwhelmed, entrepreneurial guy with kids. And there's just a ton of value in that. And it makes it easy for him to promote those ideas because it's not just him saying, well, look at me, I'm, you know, super healthy. It's him saying, I'm going to help you in a specific way.
Yeah. And true to form, I'm on his website right now, and he also uses a healthy dose of controversy and personality. And so I'm looking at the site and it says, diets suck, look better, feel better, eat like a man. So obviously he's trying to kick up a lot of controversy about the current state of advice in the space. So I think that that's really interesting. And when I think about localizing, one of the questions that really answers for people, because they're going to naturally ask this, is who is this idea for? Does this apply to me? And so I think about a really simple example of localizing. So there's a CRM out there called Contactually, and it's been around for a very long time. And I was on their website recently, and so far as I can tell, all they did was update the copy on the website. And it now says CRM for real estate agents. So,
you know,
go ahead.
I used Contactually 5-6 years ago, maybe.
Same here.
For a while. And love the idea, just kind of, you know, stopped using it at some point. But that was the target market back then, was real estate agents. I'm almost 100% sure, because I remember just seeing that in their website copy. So I'm not sure they've changed anything.
Well, it's definitely more front and center now.
Okay. So, good. I mean, from a positioning perspective, I think that's really good.
So let's talk about, I think there's two related ones here, but these are the final two. And one is attitude or personality. So it's really about taking generic ideas and adding an element of personality. And I can think of two examples. So one would be an internet famous person that we're both familiar with, and that's Moitza Mars. So she, the name of her business is Spicy Social Media, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And
super spicy, I think.
Super spicy social media.
not even just spicy, super spicy.
Super spicy. And, you know, she really showcases a very informal, conversational kind of take on social media marketing. Now, I'm not a social media marketing expert, so I don't know how different or similar or fresh or not her ideas are. What I do know is that you get a sense of who she is whenever you're exposed to her brand. And she does a really good job of making that come through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And sometimes it is like the ideas are, it's hard to say this without sounding dismissive, but I don't think this is a criticism at all. It's just an observation that sometimes the idea, like if you took out all the personality, they are 100% interchangeable with something somebody else might be repping, but it's that person's personality makes it unique to them and makes it not interchangeable, because, you know, the idea is relevant. It can't just be a dumb, you know, not relevant idea. But at the same time, it's when you add that personality, it becomes unique to that person.
Right, which I think is a really should be comforting to anybody listening to this, because the big point there is, if you are, especially if you're a business of one, or you want to keep your business very intentionally small, and you want to continue to be out in front, this works very well for you. So there's no other Philip Morgan in the world. There's no other Liston Witherell in the world. We have a unique thumbprint, a unique DNA sequence. You know, our personalities and our stamp on whatever it is that we do will be unique. I don't believe that for most people, personality can be the only approach to finding their big idea. Because by definition, you know, only a small percentage of us will be interesting enough alone on personality. Would you give people that same caution?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I know, like, I'm on Moishka's email list, so I know that that's not all she brings to it. She's right. Also has a you know, point of view or an opinion or perspective on, like, you'll see her saying things like, this is a bad way to do things, this is a better way to do things. And that is all in the mix with content that has her, you know, her sort of fingerprint all over it in terms of her personality. So in the specific case of what she's doing, she's mixing multiple of these categories to do what she does.
Yeah. And, you know, a bigger example of a personality is Gary Vaynerchuk, good old Gary V. And, you know, I'm not extremely familiar with his content. What I do know is there is absolutely no mistaking this guy when you see him. It's so clearly him and his message and the way he communicates. And he has a very signature way of communicating his ideas that seems like no one else in the world could do it quite this way.
Right. Yeah, that's a great example. Because, you know, the ideas are, if you just kind of boil them down to a summary, they're things like, you know, you got to work really hard. No one's going to hand you a successful business.
Right.
And I'm also not familiar with Gary Vee stuff beyond just a superficial level. But I mean, that's one of the big ideas that he seems to bring up over and over again, is you really do have to work hard, and you're probably not working, as hard as you could. And you're probably telling yourself some, lies about, the role of hard work, and all of that is the advice other people have given. That's not stuff he cooked up, but we filter it through his personality, and you feel like it's, if you're into what he's saying, you think it's just, I don't know. It has this quality of like, oh God, that's exactly what I needed to hear. I needed that tough love.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that also comes down to it's not just the message, the messenger matters. And so that's another thing to think about when you're putting together these ideas. Now, the last one, Philip, kind of on a related note, is having a tribal angle to your idea. And there's two giant brands we can talk about, but I did want to go back to an example that you stated in this localizing category, and that's Dr. Anthony Balduzzi. Now, Dr. Anthony Balduzzi has a website called Fit Father Project. Now, that's clearly tribal, in my opinion. It says it's for fathers who are or want to be fit. This is a group of people who can self-identify. Do you agree with that?
I do. You know, some tribes are more fluid because you can kind of choose to join them, or you can become a part over time. Like, well, I mean, we could contrast two tribes, right? We could say there's fathers who maybe it's a subset. Like, there's probably some guys who had kids who didn't want them, or not really trying very hard to be a good father. And then there's that sort of core group of people who are like, I'm a father and I am proud of it. And right. This is important to me. I want to be the best father I can be. And maybe that's the sort of, you know, epicenter of that tribe. And then there's this other tribe of fitness enthusiasts that would include people who are not fathers, people who are women, people who have no kids at all, people who the last thing they want is to be a father. And like, he had a choice. He could have gone after fitness enthusiasts, but I suspect that that's a very crowded market. And that's a place where just localizing, you know, and I'm not trying to, like, actually haven't read much of what Dr. Anthony Balduzzi has to say. So I'm not dismissing his content. I'm just saying that he may have said, you know what, I think I'll have an easier time getting this tribe excited about these ideas if I really emphasize the, you know, the tribal kind of identity, the commonality that we share. And I assume that he's a father, although I don't know, maybe he's not. You know what I mean? Like, he, that would be an interesting kind of edge case. Like, I'm not a software developer, but I focus on software developers because I have enough. I think I have enough in common with how they think to
right.
be effective at helping them. But anyway, yeah, that's, I think that's also a quality of what Balduzzi is doing, is that there's this tribal thing of like, we are in the same club. And that's a part of, that's actually not about the idea itself. But that's a very powerful thing that makes his ideas relevant. It's like when someone that is in your tribe, I'm just trying so hard to avoid politics or, you know, these other areas that where
Philip, please avoid it.
Yeah. A little lower hanging fruit in terms of examples there. Because I think tribal identities play such a big role there, but they also in business, you know, like if you're a Fortune 500 CEO, that's a tribe,
right?
You know, someone else who's a CEO of a Fortune 500 company, you're going to feel like you have more in common with them than perhaps almost anybody else on the face of the planet. And yeah. So if they say something and that something, you know, it has extra credibility. It perhaps has extra relevance. You know, it's just different when it comes from inside the tribe, and that gives those ideas more power.
Yeah. You know, I can think of an example that I've been thinking a lot about recently, which is, you know, when I look around at books that are available to help you build a business, very few, I mean, less than five that I can find in existence are targeted at freelancers or solopreneurs, right? So I can take those same concepts about building a business, about, you know, how to run something effectively and grow it a little bit if I want to. And apply those to a different market, and the people, and that's built into the idea. The people who are exposed to that idea will self-identify with it. Whether or not they buy the idea is a separate issue, but it is an element of what's built into that idea from, yeah, from the start. So two other brands that do this really effectively, and these are gigantic brands, obviously. One is Harley Davidson, and they do a great job of, you know, I would say not only appealing to the I'm a biker tribe, but also I think bikers are cool and it's aspirational for me to be a biker. You know, I mean, I've been to a Harley Davidson store and most people don't have, you know, long beards or head to toe leather. They don't look like a stereotypical biker, but they still want a piece of that life.
Yeah. Or what it represents, really.
Exactly.
Not even necessarily that actual life, because they might be an investment banker during the week, and then on the weekend they like to go ride a motorcycle because how it makes them feel. But then there's that extra element of like aspirationally identifying with the rebels and the outcasts and the people who have this strength of something that they feel transmitted through the brand. That's what's to me interesting about the tribal category of ideas, is that as soon as you try to put them into words, it sounds so ridiculous. but the feeling of it is so distinct and undeniable. And so, you know, just imagine going to a business conference and some dude with like tattoos all up and down his arms and a big long beard and, you know, is dressed very casually, gets up and starts rocking your world with some ideas. Chances are, if you're responding to that, it's not all the idea. The ideas are not doing all the heavy lifting. They might be doing part of the heavy lifting, but it's that feeling of like, oh, this guy's one of us, that really starts to make those ideas particularly relevant and noticeable to you.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think it really conjures a feeling and maybe some sort of, you know, bias that you may have in your personality or the way you view the world, I think is also a big one. So I think of a brand like Red Bull or GoPro. And so, you know, if life should be an adventure, then you would identify with those brands. So they've done a really good job of tapping into this kind of extreme market. But I think more broadly, it's like, you know, should I have adventures or be adventuresome or have thrilling experiences in my life? If so, those brands are for you.
You know, I'm thinking of this, I can't remember the name, so I won't be able to paint the full picture here, but somewhere in the last year, I came across this business that their business was the following. They had co-working spaces in like tropical locations. And they were combining the idea of a co-working space. You know, you used to work at a co-working space. We work, right?
Yep.
And it was nice, but it was a building that they retrofitted into a bunch of offices.
Yep.
This business combines travel, people who want to be, who see themselves as location independent and entrepreneurial and world citizens. And they have these co-working spaces, and they kind of like you sign up for a year, and they like move you from one to the next.
So yeah, it's called remoteyear.com, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
And to me, that's drawing. There's, you know, you could think of that as a big idea, like life should be an adventure, or there's some big idea in there somewhere, or multiple big ideas. But they're also kind of drawing on this tribal identity of, you're the kind of person who lives like that. You know, you reject this static, boring, you know, 9-to-5 existence, and you're out there kicking ass and, you know, drinking margaritas. And I don't know, again, you put this stuff into words and it sounds so dumb, but when you can depict it with imagery or video or emotions, or you kind of talk around it instead of talking directly about it, it becomes very powerful. And that struck me as another example that might fit that category.
Agreed. Well, you know, Philip, I didn't think we could do it, but I think we've solved everybody's problem in converting their generic idea to a big idea. What do you think?
Go get them, kids.
So clearly at the end of this, I think one of my takeaways would be to look around and think about which categories really resonate with you and, you know, what you want to communicate. And I think a second takeaway that I would suggest is this should prove how difficult it is to find a great idea, let alone to explain it. So I apologize if we weren't perfect or that you don't know exactly what to do, but it definitely is an art form.
I think it's worth doing. I mean, it's at the same time, I think it's not for everybody. It's not absolutely mandatory to build a great services business that you have some idea like this. But yet, I guess I would also challenge anyone who is interested in moving beyond the kind of marketing where you're dependent on referrals and repeat business to consider whether you could cultivate some kind of, you know, quote unquote, big idea, because it unlocks these other possibilities that we're talking about with stuff like partnerships and so forth, but it also just makes the rest of your marketing easier, I think.
Well, so what I was going to say is if you can't survive strictly on word of mouth and referrals, then you're only left with two options. One is to market in some way, and promoting an idea, a big idea in the marketplace, It's by far the most powerful thing that you can do to start doing that. Or it's outbound sales. I don't see any other option for a services business to really make this work if, and this may be a big if for some of you, but if your referral business isn't strong enough that you can't grow or get reach your goals without some other form of bringing in new business.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that too.
All right, Philip. Well, I think we covered it, my friend. Do you have, what is your favorite Wu-Tang song that you would recommend people listen to as they're generating their next big idea?
Wow. What's the one I sent you called?
Oh, no, you can't. No. Is that your favorite Wu-Tang song?
That's my favorite recent one.
Oh.
Let me look at a playlist here. Oh, this is so embarrassing. I got nothing.
I believe the one you sent me is called, I'm looking at their new album. This is embarrassing. Well, mine is, while you figure that out, mine is The Art of Chess Boxing. That's one of my favorite Wu-Tang songs. And that's from their original album, which I do believe was released in 1994, The Mystery of Chess Boxing, track 6 on Enter the Wu-Tang 36 Chambers.
How about when I recommend something from the same era, Big Daddy Kane from Daddy's Home, That's How I Did 'Em.
Yes, I love that. Big Daddy Kane. And finally, on the final parting shot here, if I know you've listened to this, Philip, if you, dear listener, have not heard Black Thought's 11-minute freestyle on Funkmaster Flex, which was just at the time of this recording less than a month old, I highly recommend you listen to that if you are interested in great rappers.
Oh, so good. I mean, it's like if you right now, if you just go to YouTube and Google Black Thought, it will be probably the first auto suggested thing.
Oh my goodness. He really shows people how to be a professional rapper.
Hmm. Good talking to you, Liston.
Same here, my friend. Have a good one.
Bye.